The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Brian Kelly, and Steve Grasso. Tonight on Fast, it's a crypto meltdown. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin all getting crushed after China and South Korea cracked down on mining and trading. But there's one cryptocurrency that Sergey and BK says is a screaming buy. We'll tell you what it is and how you can buy it later this hour. Plus, stocks are at record highs, and there is one name that's having an incredible start to the year. It could be just the beginning of an even bigger comeback. We will explain. But first, we start off with a record day for the markets. The Dow surging more than triple digits, closing at a record high and adding to an already big jump start to 2018. Yeah, are you tired of winning yet? Look no further than President Trump's huge tax cut for corporate America. Walmart, just the latest company to announce higher wages and bonuses thanks to the billions of dollars in relief from the U.S. government. It's happening right before our eyes. The S&P adding $500 billion in market cap since the tax cuts passed in November, raising the question, are these the greatest tax cuts ever? Which stocks will benefit the most as there's more money in Americans' pockets, Grasso?
This is the greatest tax cut. It depends on how you look at it. If you look at it as a percentage of GDP, it's not the greatest tax cut ever, right? It's way down on that list of tax cuts in the history of America. But if you look at it on the corporate side, going from 35% to 21%, the greatest tax cuts we've ever seen. You know the last time the corporate tax rate was at this level? In 1940.
Really?
So it's impossible for me to say that the tax cuts are in the market. They can't be in the market right now. You know what else is in the market? Infrastructure. So the rebuild of the country's roads are not in the market. Inflation, reinflation trade, not in the market yet. Energy, materials, industrials.
Hold on a second, though, Steve. I mean, we've had a reflation trade for 18 months.
Still going.
But if you look at commodities, well, I actually agree with you, but you can't say it's not in the market. The question is, how much is there?
How much is left? How much is left? And that's the key.
And I think the other side of this that really we need to think about is if you think about how much octane has been thrown on this market, when Walmart starts handing out monopoly money, we've heard about the other corporates that are doing it. By the way, it tells you what I think what corporate America got away with on this tax bill. And I will express that. I don't think we needed to go from 38 to 21 overnight.
Why do you say what corporate America got away with, though? Why is it not a beneficiary
because
to the rest of 100 million people in this country own stock?
Because I think the effective tax rate for a lot of these corporates was already well below 38. In fact, it was probably significantly lower. And I think could have been a little bit more.
We're not competitive globally, though, Tim.
That's garbage. I mean, we are competitive.
Why do you say it's garbage? Look, you have companies that are going abroad.
We're having a different conversation.
I don't want to debate the validity of the tax cuts.
I mean, this is not the conversation I came here to have.
The debate here is whether or not they're in the markets, whether or not this is good for the American consumer, whether or not it's good for stocks.
You can buy every sector, every space. They are not in the market. We don't know how they're going to spend this money.
But you know, what I have to say is that we've had an enormous run. Consumer confidence is at 17-year highs. We've had a place here where everybody thinks nothing bad can happen. Volatility is too low, and that scares me. I'm sorry. I do think that the places that are more representative of where you're going to get follow-through from this tax cut are the consumer sectors, are definitely the banks and in retail. These are places where I think they were probably less than competitive, and I think these guys were going from 38 to 21.
So there will be a positive impact on those sectors.
Look, it's obvious that there has been, but to say that this is, I think we're starting to see the types of moves in people and in behavior that comes, you know, before there's at least.
So you should be selling your entire portfolio, not to be.
Let's spread our
portfolio. What's not necessarily in the market. What is a surprise to the market here is the amount of wage increases that we've seen over the last couple of days. Nobody expected that. Nobody predicted that you'd get a $1,000 bonus or Walmart would increase their minimum wage. So that is something that's new for the market. So then you have to start thinking, okay, so where are people going to spend that money? You have to look at, you know, consumer discretionary. Those type of things, to me, are the places that have not been priced in. We can argue about how much the tax code has been priced in. I agree that we don't know what kind of infrastructure or how that money's going to spend. There's some kind of multiplier to it. But what I do know is people have more money in their pocket. Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's been completely priced in, but I do think, I mean, I'm happy to own what I own, right? So I love a day like this because I make money. But I'm like, with Tim, I get a little nervous because this wage increase, right? We're seeing that. We're seeing commodity price moving up. Look at oil. That really starts to get me nervous about inflation. And so when you think about what drives valuation or market, obviously it's PE multiples and what is the risk-free rate, right? So if we start to see inflation and we start to see rates increase, that to me is the biggest, most likely fly in the ointment.
And is that why you're concerned about it?
Well, look, if you look at the wholesale index of prices and you're talking about things like resins, rubber, asphalt, these things are going up. They're about to break out to fresh highs. Look, I've been long a lot of this stuff for 18 months. I'm not upset about it. I'm telling you that I think inflation is something that's very real. I think the Fed is behind the curve. I think people don't have four Fed hikes priced in this year. And I'm looking at the rest of the world. If Europe is truly starting to normalize,
but that's
even a little
we heard,
bit,
we heard
that's going to have a big impact
price
here.
Targeting. Yeah, they're not going for straight inflation targets. They're price targeting, so a ballpark in the area. So I wouldn't worry about inflation. We're coming from such a low rate that I don't think that's a world of hurt.
I think if we were on this path that they've laid out, then that's fine. A surprise inflationary spike, though, that to me is what really has the potential to sort of throw a wrench into things. I do think, though, the other part of that is driving that isn't fully in there is the worldwide global growth story.
Right.
Being
Which has probably
early,
been
early.
A fuel for the reflation rate up till now.
Of course it
without
has.
Without infrastructure, though. But that's the fly in the oil. That's the upside.
So that's,
potential
it's
right?
a double-edged sword here, right? So we have this global synchronized growth that everybody's talking about. Now look at what's happening to the U.S. dollar. It's starting to, I mean, it already has weakened, but it looks like it's going to take another leg lower here. So now I have international companies, U.S. companies that do business internationally that are going to get a tailwind from the lower U.S. dollar. And I've got global growth. That's very good for the stock market. The other side of that, the double-edged sword of that, is we're already seeing reflation. So the dollar's going lower. That's going to accelerate it. To Karen's point, that could be the surprise inflationary impulse.
So indulge me. What do you buy? Given all that, what do you buy?
You buy.
What do you stay long?
You buy
what do you sell?
Ultimate,
what do you do?
You buy the ultimate consumer stock, Apple. Because that's what people are going to spend. Everybody wants a new shiny phone or a new shiny iPad or something. You buy Apple.
I think, look, we had best GDP in 6 years out of Germany this morning. We had industrial production that's up 3.2%. You buy European banks. Again, the euro will be 130 before the end of the year, and the bund will be over 1%. The European banks are trading cheapest price to tangible book. This is obvious to me, and this is the second phase of this trade. Again, to be clear, global growth is a good thing. I think emerging markets, by the way, if you hedge off whatever dollar risk you think you have there, they have to go higher, and I did more of that today.
Well, our next guest says the tax cuts are already priced in and has yet to go full bull. Why not? Bring in Mike Wilson, chief U.S. equity strategist at Morgan Stanley. What's holding you back, Mike?
Well, I think as we probably got a little excited last year in anticipation of what's happening now, it's sort of a sell the news. I mean, everything we talked about, global synchronous recovery, the fact that rates remain low and pinned, allowed multiples to expand, the tax cuts. I mean, these are things that the market figured out last year. And then, of course, now we got a capitulation in the last couple of months, and we're finally starting to see the euphoria that we predicted at the beginning of 2017. Doesn't mean it's over. In fact, overbought markets can be a very bullish signal. But I'm kind of in Tim's camp. Look, the global reflation story started in 2016, right? The reflationary trade has been in gear, and we're still there, and we think it's going to continue. But I would be very surprised if in 2018 we don't see a peak in the reflation trade. Okay, so the opposite of what people are kind of worried about. I don't think we get killed by rates. I think we get killed by the growth rate peaking out again. Doesn't mean recession, but that deceleration is going to cause a rotation back towards probably defensives at some point. Now, we're still geared towards the cyclicals for now. In fact, we're full bore on that. And of the cyclicals, we think energy is the best risk reward because it really lagged. And there's a real fundamental story there between supply and demand, and earnings revisions have turned up.
Yeah. So let me ask something. If you had it priced in for last year, how did you have it priced in when it really wasn't clear that it was actually going to happen until very, very, very late in the year?
Yeah.
And it came together very quickly at the end. How could that already be priced in for last year?
Yeah. Well, the market didn't price it until the end. I'm saying our price target last year assumed it was going to happen, which is why we had a 2,700 target for last year. So, you know, then, of course, it eventually happened in November and December. It got priced. So here we are at 2750. It's hard for me to get excited about something that I think has been somewhat priced.
But what is being priced, either it was priced last year by you or priced this year by people who are slower in the markets, is this mechanical change in the corporate tax rate. What is maybe not being priced is a sort of the ancillary effects of that, and that is companies like Walmart or Fifth Third increasing
the wage rates for their workers. I mean,
absolutely.
How does that, or
increasing consumption,
right? Or
which
increasing capital expenditures. I mean,
right.
Has that been priced in?
So let's talk about. So the first order effects, I think, have been priced. Meaning, going from first of all, the tax cuts came sooner than we thought, mm-hmm. and they were a little bit bigger, which is why we got to our target a little faster, right? And we could overshoot that. So we're not adverse to the idea that we're going to overshoot here, but that's a speculative move. That's a much lower quality move. Okay. Let's go back though to the second order effects. The second order effects have not been priced. To your point, Melissa, I agree. Some companies are going to see benefits on the top line, but many companies are going to see detrimental effects from higher wage costs, pricing it away, higher energy prices as the economy overheats. And that's the part where I think, so the beta trade's over, okay? Now it's about the alpha trade. And this is where I think it's going to be very interesting over the course of the next two quarters, where you're going to make a lot more money trying to pick stocks and sectors where companies have overestimated or investors have overestimated or where they perhaps underestimated the benefits of tax.
So, that's Mike, when we start off the show, we said, is the tax cut priced in? So going through all of your mechanisms in your calculus, you would say it's priced in for some sectors, not for all, but as a whole, does the market move higher, much higher, substantially higher from here?
Yeah, I think the market's going to overshoot in the first half of the year. And so our bull case is 3,000, which I think we get in the first half. Okay, and then but then here's the thing. I think in the second half, the market realizes this is a lower quality earnings increase. Okay, I think it's very hard to argue that
just because of the tax rate.
Absolutely.
Okay.
In other words, a tax increase on earnings is a very different type of increase on earnings than what we got the last 2 years, which is revenue growth and margin expansion. I firmly believe, and we've written about this, I think that the operating margins, okay, incremental operating margins are likely to peak this year. So what you're going to see is earnings go up, but operating margins come down. That's lower quality. But I don't think the market will figure that out right away. I think it'll take a little time.
It sounds like you think then this was a terrible tax cut because it's throwing gas on a fire that was already lit.
Totally.
And that we're getting to a place where this is going to be, you know, ephemeral, you know, in some way. And so, and that, in fact, the consumption trade isn't really happening. I mean, this is all about trickle-down economics, but you don't believe that.
Well, let's separate the timing versus the idea. Corporate tax cut's a very good idea, and it's good for structural growth. So it actually makes my secular bull case, you know, stronger, okay? Timing was horrendous, okay? And actually, the Senate originally discussed moving this, not doing this till 2019. That would have been smart. But, of course, politics
midterm
got
elections
in the way, and we accelerated to 2018. And I agree with you, Tim, 100%. It's like throwing gas on a burning fire. All it does is truncate the cycle. All it does is truncate it. That's not the end of the world. But let's not kid ourselves on what we're actually doing here. We're accelerating an economy that's already below full employment. We're already seeing signs of building inflation pressures and tightness in other supply chains.
Well, we were caught in a GDP that we couldn't get out of our own way.
Right.
So who is it to say that maybe this was what was supposed to get us over the hump? Since the last 8 years, we couldn't get over 3%.
Like I said, the secular stagnation theme, it's absolutely correct. All right, that's where we made a call on this in 16, was that we think secular stagnation ended, and part of the reason is because fiscal policy, the lever that needs to be pulled to use the cheap money, is what's going to get us into a full secular bull. So great idea. It's going to still work in that regard, okay? But in the very short term, from a cyclical standpoint, I'm not sure that this is the right policy at this time. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Right now, the market loves it. At some point during 2018, my guess is we're going to get a transfer. I think Karen brought up a great point about rates. We've always said 275 is where the equity risk premium starts to wobble a little bit, right? We're getting close to 275. So, and if you get to 3, I absolutely believe they're going to see a money move back from stocks towards bonds. That's where there is no alternative becomes. No, there actually is an alternative. It's bonds again at 3%.
Mike, thanks.
Thank you, Wilson.
What did you do today?
Well, for me, and Tim was talking about emerging markets. So last week I bought some Brazil. This week I added to that position, or today I added to that position EWZ. I think that's the way to play this. As you see a lower dollar, that's your kind of lower dollar emerging markets play.
275 isn't too far from here.
No, it's not.
It's around the corner.
It could be, right. It could be days away. I mean, it's been, passing 240 and then 250, it sort of gets easier. Right. I think that next move up gets easier. That's my biggest fear, which is why TBT today didn't work. But I feel like I've got to have some protection against that.
Why do I thread the needle then? Why do I try and market time? I mean, if I'm really to believe that 275
is the
place where things start to wobble and we're not that far away. And I've had pretty good gains from last year to date.
Well,
what's the risk reward here?
So here's what Karen's talked about. I think a lot of people talked about it. But you know, what I started is throw nets underneath positions that I think are reflective of that. Emerging markets, for sure. There's a part of my portfolio that I trade very actively. Why not match that up 2 or 3% out of the money? And to me, I'm playing for expiration next Friday, by the way. I think we're right now, we're in a week to 10 days of craziness. I just assume protect for now in the short run. And that's to keep in these positions. I threw some more pedal to the metal once I was protected underneath. But I think the stuff that was cheap, and that's airlines, that's autos, and those are going to be places where the consumption effect is front-loaded. If anywhere, consumption, those are multiples I still feel comfortable owning.
All right. We've got some breaking news here out of the White House. Let's get to Eamon Javers, who's on the ground there. Eamon.
Melissa, that's right. The White House is now responding to a Washington Post report which reported that the president used a crude epithet when talking about immigrants from certain countries in a meeting here at the Oval Office at the White House earlier today. The Washington Post reporting that the president grew frustrated with lawmakers in the Oval Office when they floated ideas for restoring protections for immigrants from Haiti, El Salvador, and African countries as part of that immigration deal that's been under discussion. The Washington Post quoting the president as saying, "Why are we having all these people from shithole countries come here?" He also went on to say, according to the Washington Post, that the United States should have more people from countries like Norway brought in under the immigration deal. The White House now issuing a statement. Raj Shah, the White House spokesman, the statement does not deny that the president made that comment. Raj Shah saying, "Certain Washington politicians choose to fight for foreign countries, but President Trump will always fight for the American people. The president will only accept an immigration deal that adequately addresses the visa lottery system and chain migration, two programs that hurt our country and allow terrorists into our country." There's more to the statement here, but the important part of it is that they're not denying that the president made the crude comment. That is going to probably drive some media coverage here over the next little while here. Melissa, back over to you.
Wow. Eamon, thank you. Eamon Javers in front of the White House for us this evening. Does this impact the Trump agenda, Grasso?
No, I think this is actually what everyone expects out of the Trump agenda. So I think everyone's become
it's right
numb,
up there in the Trump agenda.
Numb to the way he delivers. This is his personality. I think everyone, you know, like him, hate him, or indifferent, this is what you know what you get already. So I don't think it's shocking to anybody.
All right. Although we are shocked on the desk.
We are. Eamon, it's a little bit different.
All right. Coming up, it's crypto carnage on Wall Street as the major coins get crushed, but there's a coin you may never have heard of that's taking off, and BK says it's a screaming buy. Plus, score one for Intel. Check out shares of AMD sinking after hours. We'll bring you the very latest details on the chip wars right after this break. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a news alert on AMD. The stock is sinking after hours. Let's get to Josh Lipton for all the details. Josh.
Melissa, AMD now giving more details about its exposure to those two massive security vulnerabilities dubbed Meltdown and Spectre. Researchers disclosing those two flaws last week that now have really the tech industry on high alert here. AMD saying that Meltdown is not applicable to AMD processors. The company saying that AMD processors are not susceptible there. But then there's also Spectre. Now, the company saying that Spectre is applicable to AMD processors. AMD says its architecture makes it tough to exploit, but they are working now with the industry with a combination of updates and operating system patches, they say, which are going to be available to customers and partners. Remember, initially, AMD said it had near zero risk to these threats. Now the company trying to further clarify its exposure. Intel CEO Brian Krzanich was on CNBC initially, and Melissa, remember, he said many companies would be exposed, that it wasn't just Intel. Take a listen.
I can't tell you exactly on the other guys, on the other products, exactly which ones are affected, but definitely most of the modern high-performance processors that you're seeing in your leading-edge products across that array that you talked about, phones, PCs, everything, are going to have some impact.
And Melissa, final point here. You know, Microsoft was distributing patches for the majority of AMD systems. AMD saying they're trying to now correct this issue that paused the distribution of those patches for at least some of those older AMD processors. AMD saying they expect this issue to be corrected shortly, and Microsoft should resume updates for these older processors, they say, by next week. Melissa, back to you.
Is there any word as to why AMD didn't just come out initially and say, we've got these vulnerabilities as well, we're studying the issue as to how widespread this is?
You know, Melissa, they I don't think they ever said they didn't have any vulnerability. You know, they were careful right. in that language. They certainly said they had near zero risk. Perhaps studying it more, they've now tried to clarify what that risk would be, at least to Spectre on that issue, Melissa.
All right, Josh, thank you. Josh Lipton from San Francisco with all the details there. You know, we did see Intel shares at least underperform its peers pretty much year to date because of the news that there is this vulnerability out there.
Well, and we questioned, one, how true could this be, first of all, if everyone's known about it and, you know, now it's coming out. But also, I think the real question was, we know what we don't know with Intel, but we think this is going to help AMD, and that's really the trade. And that's why I think the price action is the way it is. I think it's as simple as that. I think people tried to play this through AMD. Obviously, Intel suffered. Until we get more clarity, I still think Intel is the place.
But I wonder if now, because AMD traded up 20%, to your point, Intel traded down 10%. But now if there's some grayness in the environment now where it's not a flat win for AMD over Intel, I wonder if you start to see people say, let me go back to Intel if there's no difference, period. So you could see that reverse happen as well as it just happened in the last week or so.
All right, we have to move on here. Time for some stock jeopardy. The answer, this Dow stock is surging. Here are the clues. It's got a market cap of $166 billion. So far this year, it's the second best Dow performer, and it's up 9%. And last year, it was the worst performing Dow stock, down 45%. Do you know what it is? What is General Electric? That's right, cue the cheesy 80s music because the blue chip stock is surging in the new year, making quite the comeback from a very rough 2017. So is 2018 the year of GE? Tim hopes so. He's been long.
Well, I think we have to answer, who was that cheesy vocal?
I have
was
no
that
idea.
Bryson?
Sounds like cheesy.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to go... People,
oh,
that's
GE
not
commercial.
Here. I'm so sorry.
It was a GE commercial.
But anyway, it was a GE commercial.
Yeah, it could have been.
It's definitely people. Well, they overpaid for that one, too, then. look, the reality is when you cut EPS by 50%, when you cut free cash flow expectations by 50%, and you leave it with a nice, clean buck for 2018, Tom Jones. I don't
terrible.
Know. It's very...
No, Tom Jones wouldn't do that.
That does not sound turbulent or anything.
What's
like
new, Pussycat? Come on. I mean, he... Anyway, look, bottom line here... I believe that the sentiment on GE got so washed out in 2017 that that's what this is. I think with possibly $20 billion in spinoffs, with Baker Hughes, I think, worth more than it was even 2 months ago, the fact that if you think that financials do better here and that this is not a bad environment to be in credit and to have exposure to the economy, GE Capital still has $140 billion in assets. So I don't think earnings turn around too quickly, but I bet Buck is on the low side. That's what I bet.
Well, I think that the energy part is interesting, but just look at the stock. The thing that it has going for it is it's so levered, right? So if we're in a great environment and they can start to really move things, then that valuation all falls to the bottom, to the stock price, then it could really be juiced
up. Sounds like you're interested.
Kind of interested. More in Baker Hughes GE.
Yeah, so I've been in and out of GE, so I'm a bit of a scorned lover, and I have not liked it for a while, but I've been rethinking my thoughts on this. That's very bad. but here's what I agree with you guys in that you have to believe that there's going to be a turnaround and there's going to be surprises in this, right? So if all the bad news is out, then presumably all there is are surprises, and those could be the catalyst for the stock. So I don't think you get hurt, and I would start to nibble at it here.
I mean, if we enter into a normal reality back to the 2017 where the true leaders in tech really start to gain again. I mean, we've seen this nirvana where you have everything rallying at the same time. This is definitely, to our point, a laggard. If you get that back, which I think you will in the first quarter, this is going to be a sell once again.
So it's only rallying because everything is rallying.
Yeah, I think it's just being rising tide.
What does get that back mean? And it's going
to
be a sell.
I
don't really understand that.
If you go back to tech outperforming, if you go back to FANG, if you go back to STAB, if you go back to energy, materials, and industrial.
Non-cyclical and non-value plays outperformance is what we've had. You reverse that.
I think this is definitely a dog showing some sorts of life to it. And if we don't get everything lifting at once, this will be the first one to be let go.
All right. Coming up, Bitcoin is sinking as it continues to fall from its December highs near 19,000. There's another coin, though, that BK here says could be your ticket to crypto paradise. He'll reveal that name. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Missed the move in energy?
Oh, for God, Don.
Don't worry, because another group of stocks closely tied to oil's fate is also surging, and our traders see more room to run. Plus, the last time Karen pitched a stock, it surged 12% in a month. Now she's got a new name that's hit a 52-week high today, and you won't believe just how high she sees it going. The name, when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Cryptocurrency is getting crushed as one of the world's biggest crypto markets is gearing up to crack down on trading operations. Bob Pisani is breaking it down from the NYSE. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Melissa. Regulators everywhere are taking a closer look at cryptocurrencies. South Korea's justice ministry said it was preparing a bill that will ban all cryptocurrency trading. The country's one of the biggest markets for major coins like Bitcoin and Ethereum, as well as Ripple. And the Wall Street Journal is reporting that China is ordering the closure of Bitcoin mining operations. They've already shut down exchanges that trade cryptocurrencies. So this is ramping things up a little bit. And a U.S. Senate panel is holding a hearing next month with top market regulators on the risks cryptocurrencies pose to the U.S. financial system. Elsewhere, for all this ruckus around Bitcoin, have you noticed that Bitcoin has been fairly quiet since Bitcoin futures started trading on December 10th on the CBOE? It traded in a wild range going into that, but other than that brief blip up, it's been basically between 13 and 16,000 since then. Pretty quiet compared to the wild rides of Ripple and Ethereum, for example. There may be something to the argument that the introduction of futures has made Bitcoin less volatile. Or maybe, Melissa, your show is the reason volatility is lower. You introduced the Bitcoin bug. That was around December 17th, as I recall. That's right as the CME Bitcoin future started. Maybe it was you who topped out Bitcoin. Who knows? Finally, notice that Ripple is the only big cryptocurrency up today, and for good reason. They inked a deal with money transfer company MoneyGram. The partnership will have MoneyGram test the Ripple infrastructure for use in transferring funds around. That's a big piece of news because that's the purpose of Ripple, transferring money between financial institutions. Back to you, Melissa.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob Pisani. And we were talking about that with one of the creators of Ethereum, the use case,
right,
and how you value a coin could also include what the use case is for the platform, right?
Yeah, and I think people are looking for the most interesting use cases to derive the highest multiple for their coin. But again, I think valuations right now are really challenging. That doesn't mean, the
across the board.
It doesn't mean the reason for being and, the proof of the proof case is not being proven right now. But I think people are buying because it's going higher.
I have a question for BK, actually.
Oh, he's here.
Okay, good. So the China mining thing is this great news for all the other miners in the world.
Yes, it is great news. So about 70-75% of the mining is in China right now. So the question is, a lot of those Chinese miners are moving out of China. They've already started this process, so this is not necessarily new news. The real question for Bitcoin is how quickly can they ramp up in other parts of the world? So Michelle had a great report today from Washington State, big Bitcoin mines there. It's very positive in the sense that you don't want to have all your mining concentrated in one country, because then that kind of is a centralized type of thing. So if we can get this dispersed across the world, in the long run, this is actually going to be quite positive for Bitcoin. In the short run, you could see some hiccups. You could see the network slow down.
Well, I don't think anyone buys this on valuation. I don't know what valuation you could be looking at. So I traded around the peripheral. So I trade it with overstock, because then you deal with...
You're buying that on valuation?
No, because there's no valuation.
Okay,
you just said that you were afraid of valuation in Bitcoin.
I heard you talking about stocks.
What's valuation?
I'm asking you.
You said it.
I think we're on a different show. Did you not say Bitcoin?
People buying it because it's going up.
I'm nervous about valuation.
Yeah.
The point.
Yes, I did.
Hello.
You started saying...
The point is that you're not buying Bitcoin because you can't get a handle on valuation, but you're buying overstock.
Blockchain.
Can you get a handle on valuation there?
Blockchain, because I'm buying blockchain. So whether or not Bitcoin is successful blockchain will be successful in the longer term. So I'm buying that based on T0, which is their ICO.
All right. Well, despite all the regulation talk, BK says there's one coin that should be the next shiny addition to your crypto portfolio. BK, why don't you head over to the plasma?
Why don't I
get the
try
crypto
to walk
class
and talk
going?
Here. So what's interesting about some of this regulatory talk that's coming out of South Korea is that there's a couple different agencies out there. I wouldn't surprise if they go kind of the Japan route, where they have really good regulation, similar to have what we have here in the U.S. But let's take a look at one coin that was interesting to me that I bought today off of that Ripple news. So I think that Ripple news was very big. Ripple had the use case for it is to send stuff around the world. Now you're going to be able to actually use the currency, or MoneyGram's going to start doing that. So why don't we look at another one? Stellar. Stellar is one that is very similar to Ripple. It's created by one of the creators of Ripple. Effectively, the company split and they went out and created Stellar. They're already working with IBM. They inked a deal with them to do cross-border payments. So IBM has a payment system similar to what MoneyGram wants to do. It's faster and cheaper than Bitcoin. And why that? What I mean by that is you can move stuff around faster and it'll cost you less than Bitcoin at this point in time. So those are the things that I like about Stellar. So let's go to the next slide. All right, MoneyGram deal with Ripple. I actually think this is a watershed event for the industry. The biggest problem that people have had is, okay, why do I use these coins? Well, you use it if you're MoneyGram, so you don't have to hold a lot of foreign currency. Other people are going to start looking to say, okay, how do I compete against MoneyGram, right? They're going to get their margins lower. I got to go out there and look. So now who do I look for? Somebody that's very similar to Ripple, that has a deal with IBM, and I can get bigger margins, or at least I can make more money like MoneyGram wants to do. And the partnership with IBM, again, that I think that's very important here. And we talked about how IBM doesn't get enough credit for what they're doing. Now, let's look at the chart. Let's look at what's going on here. Okay, so Stellar, here you go. Had this big, big run. That's all on the IBM news. Boom, we're down here. It's trading at about 55 to 60 cents or so. I think you get another jump up there as more news starts to come out and more people start to look to use this technology.
Hi, BK.
Hi.
Hi. Good question for you.
Yes.
How big is the market cap of Stellar right now relative, and where do you think those would potentially converge, or what do you think the future upside could be?
Yeah, the market cap on all of these things are somewhat outrageous. And by that, I mean outrageous when it comes to stock parameters. We're talking about currencies here, so they can grow to the size that they need to grow. Ripple, in a sense, or where do I think it can go on the upside here, trading 55 to 60 cents would not surprise me to see this thing over a dollar, so a double, especially if they announce some kind of news or if anybody comes out and says, hey, we're going to start using this like MoneyGram is.
BK, play sales trader for me. On a day like today and a week we've had where things have been pulling back, what are you seeing in terms of the momentum? And are there scared sellers out there? Think about the hands that are holding this. There are not a lot of strong hands out there, so to speak. What are you seeing?
Yeah, you're seeing U.S. investors buying, Asian investors selling. And that's created this dynamic where Bitcoin's been just trading in this very large range.
What exchange can you buy Stellar on in the U.S.?
You can buy Stellar on the Bittrex exchange and on the Poloniex exchange are the two that I have used.
All right. Thanks, BK, for that
My pleasure. Crypto class.
Still ahead, two major sporting events, the Super Bowl and Olympics. They're both just around the corner, and they're giving a major boost to one group of stocks. We'll reveal what those are. Plus, Karen has made her way over to the Plaza. She bumped out BK.
Yeah.
She's warm enough to pitch the one soaring stock she thinks could fly even higher, but can she convince the other trader to find
Careful.
Out when she delivers her fast pitch? Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Time for an instant replay. Now, back in July, Karen said GM was going to rev up.
So I got a lot of reasons why you should buy it. The first one, for me, always valuation. So at a PE multiple of 6, which is ridiculously low, probably one of the lowest in the S&P, and a dividend yield of almost 4.25%, on a valuation basis, this is just ridiculously low.
Karen was right. Since that call, the stock is up more than 23%. So what are you doing now?
I'm doing a new one now. Another pitch.
But are you? Wait. You're still in GM.
I'm still
sorry.
No. I thought you meant. I thought you meant right now.
With the stock.
GM. I'm still in it. I still think it's cheap. All the things that were true then are true now. The market's a lot higher, of course. We do have a tax cut. That's good for them. Still in it.
All right. So Karen's on a roll. So now. Why don't you pitch us your next stock?
Now I'm going to do that. I'm going to walk over to the Plaza and pitch you my next stock. All right. This stock today is Delta. A lot of action in the stock today. It's been up, but I still think that there's a great value here. That's always what I turn to first, valuation. So they upped their guidance today. They think the average was about, or the midpoint was 652. So on a PE basis, it is very attractive. Now, I understand it's a cyclical, and PEs are not going to be the same in the cyclical as they're going to be for the market at large. But I still think there's room to run here. So we've got a lot of economic momentum. And the conference call today, they talked about seeing growth around the world. They talked they're going to have revenue growth from transatlantic. They're going to have Latin America growth. They're going to have domestic growth. And they're going to have Pacific growth. They talked about all cylinders hitting, which is really what you want to hear after having a little bit of a difficult time in the second half of last year. So this economic momentum is really important. If we look at the stock versus not just the S&P, where is this here? There we go. Not just the S&P, but also look at the Euro stock index. Delta is far behind. I think there's a lot of room to be made up there that is underperformance relative to where it could be. So that's the second point. There's a few other points that I want to get to. I don't have time for all of them because there's so many good things that happened on the conference call. I loved how excited they were. CASM, that's cost per average seat mile. They talked about non-fuel costs of 0 to 2% and a lot closer to zero. That's really important, and that's what's going to help their margin. That's what's going to help them earn more. One more thing they said, that the business traveler was not included in their projections that they made for last year, which did include the tax cut. But business travel is going up. That is a great margin customer. All that having been said, Delta Airlines, even though it was up, I still own it. I still like it right here.
Hi, Karen. It's Tim.
Hi, Tim.
I am a Delta holder. I like the company, but I was worried today on this call. They talked about fuel prices being, you know, roughly $7 higher than they were for the last investor day, and yet they're keeping their top line $4 to $6 in terms of growth intact. That doesn't totally make sense to me. Also, very noisy in terms of changing conventions in terms of EBIT, going from PRASM to RASM. I mean, you know, some of this stuff was a little too funky for me.
Well, obviously, they have the refinery, so they get a little bit of a some benefit there on the fuel costs. But they also raise the scepter of maybe being able to add fuel tax surcharges. This administration might be open to it. Other ones haven't. That gave me a little bit of comfort.
All right, time to vote. Are you buying or selling Karen's pitch for Delta? Steve Grasso, what do you say?
Sure, whatever Karen says. I think Delta has underperformed the space. I think it does have tremendous upside from here. And if the transports continue to perform, Delta probably has an outsized gain.
All right, there's a buy there, BK.
Yeah, for BK, it's not a flyer, it's a buyer. I think this one, I like the breakout on this one. And anybody who can pitch a frozen rope in those heels gets my vote.
Tim?
Big buy,
wow.
Big buy. Never ceases to amaze me how sentiment in the airlines can be all over the place on the same news, which is really what it's been for the last 6 months. Stay in this name.
Clean sweep here on the desk, but did Karen's pitch for Delta make you want to get on board the stock? Head to Twitter right now. Vote at CNBC Fast Money. The results later on in the show. Plus, while everyone's focused on the move in energy stocks, quietly, solar stocks are shining. The solar ETF hitting a two-year high today. We'll tell you what's behind the move. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. While everyone is focused on the energy rally, quietly, a group of stocks closely tied to the group have been shining and actually hitting a multi-year high today. Breaking it down to Seema Modi from the newsroom. Hi, Seema.
Melissa, oil prices and traditional energy stocks aren't the only thing heating up these days, Melissa. Just take a look at how hot solar stocks are. One proxy for the industry is the Guggenheim Solar ETF, ticker TAN. Shares have hit their highest level since early 2016. It's already up 6% so far year to date and up 50% over the course of the past 12 months. This is an exchange-traded fund that has around $475 million in assets. And some of the top holdings include more well-known names in solar energy. SunPower is among those names, up 13% just since the beginning of the year. Canadian Solar gaining 3% in that span. And First Solar, the biggest weighting of the fund, also up 13% year to date. A lot of the gains in some of these stocks is the result of trading today, helped along by positive analyst commentary by Vertical Group about First Solar. A big caveat here is that many of these solar stocks are still a long way from hitting their multi-year highs. So, Melissa, hot solar stocks, yes, over the medium term, but still pretty cool compared to where they were even just 3 to 4 years ago.
All right. Thank you, Seema. Seema Modi in the newsroom. Karen, what do you think of solar right now? You have been in and out of solar.
I have one position in the space, SolarEdge, in the inverter business. There's potentially a little bit of pricing pressure there. You know, A couple years ago, when oil just fell out of bed, the solar trade completely died. I'm surprised, though, that it didn't get as hurt by the tax bill as they could have been.
Right.
It could have been worse.
Well, options traders are betting on a golden rally for one solar stock. Let's get to Mike Coe out in Austin, Texas, where things are looking pretty hot.
Whoa!
Hey, Mike.
Dude.
Hi there. Yeah, so looking to harness the power of the sun and harness the power of options. First Solar saw more than four times the average daily call volume today, and where we saw the most activity were buyers of the January 75 calls. 3,700 of those were traded when I looked at the midday for just under $2, over 4,000 by the end of the day. And so buyers of those are making bullish bets that the rally will continue and First Solar could top $77 by the end of next week. Possibly some of that related to news that Trump might actually put on some protectionist policies. That's a tailwind for First Solar.
Hey, Mike, are those blue blockers?
They're not blue blockers. These bad boys are Oakley right here.
Oh, of course they are. Well, that must be a black light poster from your bedroom behind you.
I thought he was doing a cannabis trade. I really did.
We'll save that.
You need these for Chinese that restaurant right now.
Mike, thanks. Looking pretty cool in that hot studio. For more options action, check out the full show tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Still ahead, are you with Karen? Do you see Delta stock soaring past its 52-week high, or is there turbulence ahead for the airline? Twitter poll at CNBC Fast Money. Results later on in the show. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got some breaking news on Fiat Chrysler. Let's get to Phil LeBeau, who's on the Fast Line. Phil.
Melissa, this is a big announcement from Fiat Chrysler, all in relationship to the savings that the company is going to be receiving from the new tax law. It will be investing $1 billion in the Warren heavy-duty truck plant, and as part of this, it will be moving its Ram heavy-duty production from a plant in Mexico to Michigan. As part of that move, it will add 2,500 jobs, and finally, the company is saying that it will give its 60,000 hourly and salaried workers in the United States a bonus of $2,000. And that's in addition to the normal profit sharing that the company does every single year. So again, Fiat Chrysler making a big statement saying because of the changes in the tax law, it's time to invest in its footprint in the United States. It's moving the Ram heavy-duty truck production from Mexico to Michigan, adding 2,500 jobs and investing $1 billion at the Warren truck plant in Michigan. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Phil, thanks a lot. Phil LeBeau with the latest on FCAU. There are a few things that this really hits at. First of all, it hits at the impact, the positive impact from corporate tax. It gets at the immediate depreciation of capital expenditures, right? Because they're
bringing it back.
Right, yeah, exactly. And it front runs any changes to NAFTA. I mean, it's really a stroke of genius on the part of Fiat Chrysler.
It's very bright. You're also seeing Toyota announce that they're putting new plants to work in Alabama and putting more jobs. And, in fact, the big three will be challenged by global automakers who will probably be building more cars in the United States. This is, you know, it's a manufacturing hub again. And the move, by the way, in Fiat Chrysler is been astronomical since late December. So.
Yeah, I think this is a big deal. This is a big deal for the country. I mean, we've seen some of these moves prior to the tax cut. You know, we're going to add a couple. We're going to have three jobs in this country or in this county here or that. This is moving a plant. This is a $1 billion investment. And to Grasso's point at the top of the show, this is not priced into the market.
How can prices not go up, though? How can prices not go up for cars?
Labor, for
yes,
everything.
But even the argument for staying in NAFTA is that the auto parts makers are in Mexico as well, that there's a whole supply chain, right, built around the fact that factories are in Mexico. So if all of a sudden this factory is going to move to the United States, there's got to be an extra cost to revamping the supply chain.
There has to be, but you would think for people who say that it was just a corporate tax cut, there's going to be more money in workers' paychecks, more money in their wallets, more money to spend. I mean, it is a great tax cut that we don't even see.
More inflation.
Yes.
Well, we don't see the benefits.
Well, you just
yet.
Said, I hear more inflation is what rang in my ears.
You said it was a corporate tax cut at the top of the show, and I'm saying it's not just for corporations. I think this will have domino effects through your trickle down that you use in a derogatory way. I think that it's going to be a great tax cut for the country.
We got to take a break. Did Karen's pitch for Delta make you want to buy the stock? Still time to vote. You can head to Twitter right now. Make your voice heard. The answer right after this. Yeah. Welcome back. You know what's good to listen to on long flights?
Yeah, sad songs.
Toni Braxton's Unbreak My Heart. That's because America is not buying Karen's fast pick.
Look how sad you look.
Okay. I get it, though. Here's
sad
the thing.
For her.
You know, hard to buy stock up a lot.
Yeah.
But if I went home long, it's the same as I bought it on the close.
Time for the final trade. Tim.
Well, I'm happy for her airline call. I'm going to go with United Airlines. It's a trade I'm also long now. Stay there.
Karen.
Well, if I did it for my pitch, I kind of got to do it for my final trade. Delta Airlines.
Boom.
BK.
Well, BK doesn't know a lot of things, but more money in people's pockets, they buy Apple.
Steve Grasso.
Well, here's a trade that is on that climb. Avis Budget. Started talking about that at 35. It's traded at 48, making that climb to 70. Tim gets a chance to be wrong on this trade as well.
Something you know well, Steve.
Oh, this is a fighting
I learned it from you.
We're just 10 seconds left on the show.
Something
excellent.
You know well.
I'm Melissa Lee. Thanks for watching. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Money. Meantime, Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.